And there they are, the Tom Tom Club out of 1983. Kind of the offshoot band of the Talking Heads, if you follow your musicology. Tina Weymouth, bass player in the Talking Heads, formed that band, the Tom Tom Club, with a couple of her sisters, and they were pretty awesome and still are. And the Wordy Rapping Hood is that tune, and it is also the name of this program that you've stumbled across here on RPPFM, the voice of the peninsula. Tracy Hutchison here with you, and the premise of this show, the Wordy Rapping Hood, is all about profiling the really cool, fabulous people that are calling the peninsula home. And I'm thrilled to welcome a chap who's very proudly called the Peninsula home, or the Ninch, as Steve Bastoni likes to call it, the actor, writer, director, producer, the director of the Peninsula Short Film Festival, who's brought more than a little tinsel of Hollywood to Rosebud. It's a welcome to you, Steve Bastoni. Welcome to the Wordy Rap.
Thank you. Well, it's good to be back.
And welcome back to RPP. Yeah. You're a big friend of the radio station.
Yeah, I love it. I love the local airwaves down here and what you guys are doing. It's awesome.
First question for this program is always, what brought you to the peninsula? So that's where we're going to start, and then we're going to weave our way through your film and television career, which has spanned some three decades. I'll be generous. I think it's about three, maybe
four.
More.
Three and a half. Yeah.
What brought you to the peninsula, Steve Bastoni?
Well, it's interesting. When I was about 11, we'd come down here for holidays, every summer holidays and Easter holidays. So every school holidays, we would rent a little Besser Brick unit down at Romany Lodge on Sorrento Back Beach Road. And so I would spend probably 3 months of the year down here and made friends with some of the local kids, a couple of surfer little hoods called, Darren Sullivan and Mark Jeffries and Tim Cadwell, who are just a couple of old local surfers. Well, they're not old, they're my age, but they're still surfing too, by the way. And we, you know, they kind of taught us how to surf, and we had the honorary title of semi-local at that stage, which was really big.
Cool.
Oh, if you were a semi-local, it was cool. You were allowed to surf, Sereno Back Beach.
Yeah, from my point of view, you were the holidaymaker.
That's right.
That's okay. That was generous.
Well, the tourists, you know, got all kinds of grief in the water. So being a semi-local meant that, you know, you didn't get, you know, you got a couple of waves. Hmm. So, and when I had my family in, when I finished Neighbours some 8 years ago, and we were pregnant with our first son, my wife and I started looking for a place to buy, and we were looking around Doncaster, and nothing that we wanted was in our price range. So we kept going further and further out until we got to Clayton or somewhere. And then I said, let's just keep driving, darling. Let's just go. Let's go to the peninsula for the day. So we drove down here, and I just looked around, and I've always had a great nostalgia and soft spot for the peninsula, and very fond memories, childhood memories of you know, basically growing up here in holidays. And so this was the place we decided to buy in. So we looked around for a number of months, like a long time, and my wife got emotionally attached to about five different houses, and we had big fights on the way home, and as I was explaining why we couldn't buy those places, and we finally found one that we settled on, and it was great. And we're still in that house today, and we love it, and it's great.
And you've been very focused on really sort of owning being part of the peninsula in a kind of a sense, feeling really proud of your role on the peninsula with the evolution and the kind of the gestation of the Peninsula Film Festival, which we'll talk about at length a little later. But you talked about that nostalgia, and I think that's the thing that for a lot of people who have memories of the peninsula as a child, either as a child growing up here or as a visitor of which there were hundreds thousands every summer. Yeah. What does that nostalgia tap into for you?
I guess it was a time of innocence and discovery and, you know, everyone's childhood. We all, I suppose, everyone in my kind of age group reflects on their childhood years as the best years of their life. You know, it's pre-mortgage, pre-responsibility, pre, you know, sort of had a sense of freedom at Liberty, and certainly that beach culture of the 70s down here was very much like that, you know. Mm. So there was still, you know, the tail end of hippie era and stuff, and we had a combi van and we'd drive down, and, you know, my mum was a bit of a hippie. And so, yeah, I guess it's kind of, you know, we always tend to romanticise the past, I think, especially our childhoods. Mm. And
especially when they happen in a place that, like, that seems to be perennially sunny.
That's right. Yeah.
Whether it's raining or not.
Well, that's right. And and, you know, for me, it was always a great sense of adventure down here too. You know, like, we'd scale the cliffs down at the Sphinx Beach to go for a swim, and camp in the dunes and go surfing in the morning, and, you know, trek along the cliffs to Diamond Bay, and it was just an adventure. You know, and these guys, you know, Sully and Cadwell, they knew those cliffs like the back of their hand. So we were in good hands. Although sometimes when the wind picked up and you're carrying a surfboard on the side of a cliff, it can be really scary, particularly when that wind, you know, the board catches the wind and you feel like you're being, you know, sailboarded.
About to turn into a kite's over.
Yeah, that's right.
Steve Vastoni is our guest on RPP. The Wordy Rapping Hood is the show, and we're weaving our way through Mr. Vastoni's life and how it brought him to the peninsula. I'm going to take you back to the time of your childhood where you weren't coming here to the peninsula for summer holidays, and you were in town, and town for you was Brunswick, Carlton?
Brunswick.
So tell us about those growing up years and how, like, what was it that sparked your interest in theatre, those early influences or experiences? Like, what made the boy from the suburbs? Because you're actually born in Italy.
Born in Rome in Italy, yeah.
That's right. Come to Australia in the 70s?
Yeah, came to Australia in 73, and with my mum and two sisters, and my parents separated. Found ourselves in North Baldwin. We moved into my mother's... my grandmother's house, and she had her own. It was a spare house that they had in Baldwin, and I ended up going North Baldwin Primary School, and I was like the only WOG kid, and it was very Anglo, and I felt like a real fish out of water because I'd come from Overseas School of Rome, which is an incredible mix of cultures. It was an overseas school, international school, so you had Arabic kids, Jewish kids, you know, Asian kids, all kinds of a mix, and you know, arriving in North Baldwin where it was all blonde and blue-eyed kids, it was a real shock to my system, and I certainly didn't feel like I belonged there, you know. And I mean, it didn't help that I spoke like an American, and they weren't particularly fond of Seppos either. So so I had some adjustment issues, but learned how to fight. And then we moved to North Carlton, Princes Hill, and that was much more my speed. There was a lot more kids from different backgrounds, Italians and Greeks and stuff. And I can blame my attraction to the arts fairly and squarely on the shoulders of a woman called Di Wells, who was my primary school teacher, who was a brilliant and still is a brilliant woman. And she was our English teacher, but she was also a great mentor to anyone who was sort of into the arts and had a vivid imagination. She would put on these incredibly elaborate productions with amazing costumes and
this is primary school?
Primary school. And it wasn't even, she just put them on. And you know, Vince Colosimo was part of those, and as was another kid, Mark Kleiman, Claire Sawyer. There was all of us little tackers would get in there and we'd put on these productions at and use the theatre at Princes Hill High School. And they were packed out, and she was just a real inspiration. She taught us how to Greek dance. She was educated in the arts and in different cultures, and had a fascination with the Greek culture. So we all learnt about Zorba, and we learned how to do the dance, and we learned about Greek food. And so it was an incredible, you know, she really was a great teacher in that she gave you an insight into that world, not just a dry kind of let's learn about this place. She gave you an immersive experience, you know, where you kind of became a Greek for a couple of weeks, or in our case, you know, like, you know, we did Cinderella and The Good, the Bad and the Ugly, we did sketches from, and we did all kinds of little productions, and she'd drop us into that world and watch us play, and it was great for kids, you know. So really, Di Wells was the reason I kind of got a passion for it. And my mum was also involved in the amateur theatre at the Melbourne University Italian Theatre Group, and they had a production called Minestrone, which called for a young boy, an eight-year-old, to do a one-hour monologue at the Adelaide Arts Festival in Venetian dialect. And of course, I was probably the only kid that around who could speak Italian, let alone Venetian dialect. So I did this monologue, and of course, you know, any kid of 8 years old getting up to do a monologue is going to get applause. And I got a lot of applause, and I went, wow, I like this. So that was kind of where I was bitten by and thought, I love this. This is great. I've got them in my hand, you know. And it was kind of that's when I guess I was bitten. And that was when I was about 9. And then, of course, I went, you know, it wasn't cool to say I want to be an actor. Not only was it not cool, it was totally delusional, you know. It was like saying I want to be an astronaut. People would say, what? What are you talking about? You know, this is Brunswick, you know. You're going to be a boilermaker, a mechanic or a plumber or something like that.
Useful.
Get a trade, you know. Yeah. And you know, there weren't too many lawyers in my primary school or high school. There was probably a lot of kids who needed lawyers, but in future years. But so, you know, it was kind of an unrealistic goal. But and so I gave up on that until years later in high school when I was at Lionel Hall in Brunswick. I was asked to audition for a short film made by the Canberra Schools Commission that dealt with the parent-teacher triangle and the multiculturalism issue, which was big in the 90s.
70s,
was it? No, it was 80s when I did this. It was early 80s.
Well, it was. It was the era where Malcolm Fraser had, I guess, brought in the license for the Special Broadcasting Service, SBS, and multiculturalism was very big on the national agenda at that time.
That's right, thanks to people like Al Grasby.
On both sides of politics.
Right. So it was a good time, I guess, for it to be, you know, an Italian kid coming up as a young actor. I got quite a lot of work. So I auditioned for this short film and I got the role. And at the screening of that short film, an agent came and approached me and asked if I had any representation. And I said, what do you mean? what does that mean? And she said, do you have an agent? And I said, no. And she said, do you want one? And I said, yes. And so she became my agent. Her name was Lorraine West. She's no longer with us. And dear Lorraine was really a pioneer in theatrical representation. She was a great agent and represented a lot of big actors here in Melbourne. She had the Actors Agency and in South Melbourne. And she was my first agent for many years. And I was basically like her son, her surrogate son for a while. I started working professionally as an actor and getting work. And I considered going off to study, but then another job would come along. And so everyone said to me, look, you know, just keep doing what you're doing. It's working. So I learnt on the job pretty much. And then eventually did some training with a guy called Peter Sardi, who still has a school in Melbourne today, and decided on acting as a career. What a dumb choice.
Precarious, yes. Steve Bastoni is with us on RPP. One of those very early opportunities that came your way that was probably life-changing in many ways was the opportunity to work on the Rocky Horror Show, the live show, with Daniel Ambonieri and I think a whole bunch of other people that might have stayed in your life for a long time.
Well, Russell Crowe was a guy who went on to a couple of other things, and Simon Westaway, Megan Shapcott, Michelle Argue, Lynn Shakespeare, David Wheeler. It was quite a big cast, and certainly it was an amazing production. The 87 tour of Rocky Horror Show was incredible, and you know, it was the largest grossing tour at that time. And Richard O'Brien, who wrote wrote the original play Rocky Horror Show and played Riff Raff in the movie, came to do the Amnesty performance with us. It was one of our final performances here in Melbourne, and that was quite an amazing experience, being on stage with him as Riff Raff. So
let's have a listen to probably a ropey live version that was recorded around about 1987, think. It is Daniel Ambonieri doing, I guess, one of the most memorable songs from the Rocky Horror Show. Steve Bastoni, not Ambonieri, Steve Bastoni is our guest here on RPP. So let's just do not quite the time warp, but something else.
Yeah.
I think you'll remember this one.
Great guitar.
The live recording with some kind of postmodern edits going through from the Sweet Transvestite, the Rocky Horror Show, circa 1987. Yeah. Daniel Abernethy there, and a production Steve Bastoni, our guest here on RPP on the Wordy Rapping Hood, was part of. Yeah. Some good memories of that time.
Yeah, look, and it's been weird. I thought that was safely buried, but it's somebody keeps sending me YouTube clips of me in suspenders playing Rocky in 87. Mm. It was kind of disturbing. You know, hopefully my kid, I'll have to get a lot of explaining to do when my kids see that. But it was fun. You know, it was 9 months. We did 8 shows a week. It was relentless and ruthless. And it was really like being in a rock and roll band and just touring for 9 months. And by the end of it, we were all pretty worse for wear. But it was a lot of fun.
The first really big TV break came for you, of course, in your role as Angel in Police Rescue. I think that's how a lot of Australians really first introduced to Steve Bastoni.
Yeah.
So on air, you're playing Angel. You're performing in one of the highest rating shows on Australian television at that time. I'm going to ask you what life was like on air and what life was like off air for you during that 5 years of being really at the top of your game in an acting sense. How did that go for you?
Well, it was, you know, Rescue was one of those things that just came out of the blue. They rang me up and said, they offered me the role of Angel, and I didn't know anything about it. They'd only done a 1 hour pilot, and which had gone very well. They sent me the pilot and I watched it and I said, this is fantastic. I said, yeah, look, great, I want to be involved. And so I was living in Sydney at the time and just finished Rocky Horror Show not long before that. And I think this was like early 90s. I agreed to do it. And at that stage, we were only due to do, I think I signed on for one season. We were going to see how it went. And my character became very popular, and it was a great fun to be in. We got to do all our own stunts. This is pre the insurance days, when the insurance companies were all over everything. We actually got to do nearly all our own stunts. I wouldn't do anything with fire or motor cars, but all the stuff jumping off buildings and rappelling headfirst down pylons, all of that stuff we did. And it was a lot of fun. And learnt how to abseil, conquered my fear of heights, and got paid at the same time, which was good. But I was living in Newtown, and it was kind of an introduction. It was an ABC show, but it was the first time that ABC had really crossed into the commercial realm and resonated with a really big audience. And it was rating well over 1 million people, and which was huge. It was their biggest rating show ever. And, working with Gary Sweet and that show was amazing. We had the guest cast that came through that show reads like an Oscar winner's wish list. We had, Cate Blanchett's first screen gig was on that. Richard Roxburgh's first, good screen gig was on that. David Wenham, Russell Crowe, Miranda Otto, the list goes on. I mean, we had incredible guests, Bill Hunter, Max Cullen, amazing actors come in on that show. And, so every week was great. You'd sort of, who am I working with this week, and the first season was really well written and beautifully executed. Second one was great too. And by the third season, I think we were scratching around for fresh storylines, and the show was a bit tired. I think the cast had also become a bit complacent or something. I don't know. It lost its sparkle a bit. But, the three series were still very good. And then we made a movie, which wasn't great. But it was a lot of fun.
You talked a little bit about being nostalgic, that nostalgia that you have when you look back on things in your past that have been high points, memorable points, times of great success or achievement. And certainly for you, as being a real watershed role and absolutely being smack bang in the lounge rooms of millions of Australians every week, was a huge thing for you. How did you imagine also a regular wage for an actor, in a fairly precarious industry, what was probably something that was pretty fantastic at the time as well. How did you go with that, experiencing those things for the first time around?
Well, I was in my sort of mid to late 20s, and it was great getting that regular paycheck. It was a lot of money, and of course I wasn't very good with money, so I pretty much partied it all away and was pretty irresponsible. And, you know, I was, it was a pretty macho kind of set. So it was kind of party hard, you know, work hard, party hard. And you know, we were kind of a bit notorious for that. And it, it got a little out of control at times. And, you know, obviously it was difficult because we'd work for 6 months of the year and then have 6 months off and then have, start up again and do another 6 months. So the 6 months we were working was great. But when we weren't working, I was working in an Italian restaurant in Newtown pushing plates as a waiter. And that was challenging because I was on air. So people would be watching me in this hit show and then being served from, you know, by me at the restaurant. And some of the people weren't very gracious about that. And it was a taste of humble pie. And it also, you know, it was interesting. Like you'd get people who were, oh, you know, why aren't you on TV? You know, so I watched you last night or whatever. And then you'd get people come in and go, how's the acting career going? Can you get me some water? And, you know, like... And
where would you like that water?
And where, that's right. Yeah, there was a bit of that. And but it sort of helped me, I think, to become more thick-skinned and become resilient. And also, you know, the whole lesson about managing my money wouldn't come till much later in life when I had responsibilities with a family. But it made me resilient, you know. And it was interesting, you know, that was my first taste of, you know, managing publicity and, you know, being aware of a public profile and, you know, what you could and couldn't say in interviews, etc. And, you know, I developed a kind of a distrust for journalism and
we're
sometimes
not all bad.
No, I know you're not. And the thing is that and I went into it with, you know, I had nothing to hide. I was always pretty honest, and I still am, I think, you know, fairly honest in interviews, and but that didn't serve me well at that time. I remember, you know, saying, opening up to someone and saying, this is off the record, and she was going, yeah, you know, that's all good, fine, you know. And I got burnt a couple of times, you know, in interviews in that situation. And they were mainly tabloid kind of things. They weren't. So, you know, I kind of got an education in that realm.
And I guess people are always looking for something to write about.
That's
and,
right.
Particularly if there was, you know, some notoriety around.
Romance stuff. Yeah. You know, like I was going out with Melissa George at the time and we had a breakup and it was all over the press. And, you know, that was tough because, you know, when we got together, we were the golden couple on the cover of Woman's Day and all of that stuff. And everywhere we went, paparazzi was following us everywhere. And, you know, like we were pretty hounded for a while, and it was kind of fun, but the downside of that was when we broke up, they were just relentless all over us, and it was kind of made a lot of assumptions that were hurtful and untrue, and you know, we both kind of suffered through that a bit, and it was the not so good side of fame.
It was just over 10 years later that you landed a role in Neighbours, and there's obviously been lots of films that have happened through that period as well, Steve Bastoni, but you talked about landing that role in Neighbours in 2007 as the job that saved your life.
Yeah.
Why did the Neighbours gig, it was only for a couple of years, but it was the role of Steve Parker.
Yeah.
Why was that the job that you described as saving your life?
Yeah, it was weird. That interview was strange.
Is that another misquote?
They kind of quoted it out of context. You know, I kind of said...
How was it for you, Neighbours?
Well, Neighbours came at a great time. Yeah. You know, it was a lifesaver. I think I said something like, oh, yeah, it was a lifesaver, right. You know, because I was broke, we were pregnant, and I just moved down to Melbourne with no prospects and very little money and a baby on the way. So it was a lifesaver from that perspective. The way they framed that interview was like, oh, it saved my life, hallelujah. You know, it wasn't the case, you know. However, it did provide us with some security and opportunity to, you know, to get some security financially and buy a house and things like that, which was nice. You know, I came down not particularly wanting... I had no prospects, as I said. You know, they rang me and my agent said, how would you feel about doing a long stint on Neighbours or a two-year stint on Neighbours? And I said, look, at this point, I would consider a KFC commercial. And they offered me that role of Steve Parker as the, you know, the patriarch of the Parker family and resident vet of Erinsborough. And that was also a learning curve. I hadn't done... a regular role on series television like that for a long time. Never on a soap, you know. And I kind of wasn't really into soaps. I'd done a couple of guesties when I just started out and didn't really like what I saw. But, you know, I took that on and it was relentless pace. It was amazing. I walked in. I remember my first day on set. I was just got such a shock. I'm in this scene and it was three other people in the scene and they just started... just started talking at me and I was like, whoa, what just happened? And someone said, cut, Steve, that's where you're supposed to, you know, that's your cue. And I'm like, oh, right, okay, sorry, I just, that was just weird. It's such a big volume of work that they have to get through every day. They get through, shoot an episode a day, which is crazy. Half an hour a day of television is nuts. Mm. When you consider most films shoot about 1 minute or 2 minutes a day, you know, and most TV shoot maybe 10 minutes a day, max. You're shooting incredible ratio. So it's very, very fast. And, you know, some of the quality is sacrificed for volume, unfortunately. And I had problems with, you know, I had problems adjusting to that because I really wanted to go in there and try and make it better. And, you know, I was kind of found myself clashing with some of the, you know, a producer and some of the writers and stuff. And I just wanted to make it better, but it was seen as, you know, just don't rock the boat.
Just get on with it.
Yeah.
Which is one of the lessons of film. And you've had a very long film career that's run parallel to your very successful television career, over 30 films, according to Wikipedia. Mm. Lots of, you know, Died with Falafel in his hand, some great Australian classics in your filmography, a couple of blockbusters in there, The Matrix mm-hmm. Reloaded. Mm-hmm. And then in 2014, you hook up again with your old mate, Russell Crowe, and you work on this film called The Water Diviner. This is the Hollywood trailer.
Prince Hussein asked the man why the carpet he wished to sell was so expensive.
Come on, cuddle up! What's the magic word? The one that makes the carpet fly?
Tengu!
That's it, Tengu!
My prince, whoever sits on this carpet, may be transported through the air in an instant.
All right, boys, let's get out of here, all together!
Tengu!
The trailer, a little bit of the trailer to The Water Diviner, in which you play
Omer,
the Turk.
Turkish man. Yeah.
And hooking up again with Russell Crowe, who's remained a great friend in your life and someone that you've worked with a number of times. Talk us through that film, because it was a big film. It was the Gallipoli story. Mm. It was a really ambitious film and certainly quite a contentious film, depending on which version of events you wanted to recount.
Yeah.
What was that film like for you and working with Russell on that?
It was an amazing experience for me because, one, I was playing a Turkish man. It's one thing playing someone of a different nationality. It's another thing playing someone of a different nationality in their own tongue. So I was speaking more, you know, 90% of my dialogue was in Turkish. And, you know, it's one thing learning Turkish. It's another thing learning Turkish to the point where Turks will believe you. And that was my objective and that was what I was charged with. And so... it was a really, really difficult thing for me. You know, I'm pretty good with accents. Normally, I have no problem with accents. But learning a language, and particularly a language that is structured, the closest relative to Turkish in structure is Japanese. And it's got its roots in Finnish and Mongolian. And I mean, it's an incredible language. You know, it's Ottoman roots. And there's a lot of words that were in my dialogue that are no longer in the Turkish language, old Ottoman words. But, you know, it's got influences from Germany and from, you know, like Lutfen and Ashifteden. They're like German words. Then you've got words like Yukaradaki. Yukaradaki is Japanese, you know. Mm. And then you've got Dönduğumde, which are the French vowel sounds, Dönduğumde, and things like that, which... and then you've got Arabic sounds with the, you know, so it was an incredible experience for me to master that language. And I was fortunate enough to go to Istanbul and spend a week there researching and living among the people for a week. And just, I was studying the older men and the cafes and things and just looking at them and how they held themselves and how they spoke and spoke to each other and had a real particular way of handling, you know, holding themselves, you know, And that was, for me, an amazing experience to be given that kind of, you know, that privilege to have that research period was amazing. And so, you know, from my point of view, you know, Russell was a dream director because he gave me everything I needed, you know, to pull that role off. And at one point, to be honest, I said, Russell, you know, you've got the wrong guy. I can't do this. You know, this is crazy. You know, you're insane. You know, why don't you just cast a Turkish actor? Because I won't be able to pull this off. I just was overwhelmed by it, because the language was so difficult. And like, I'm multilingual. I speak Italian. I can pick up a bit, you know, I can speak a bit of Greek. I can pick up languages relatively easily. But Turkish was something I'd never come across. It was totally different, totally foreign to me. You know, none of it made sense to me on paper. The sounds that were there weren't phonetic like Italian or French even. You know, like I could do French in my sleep, or German or Italian or even Russian. But this was a whole different bag of tricks. So it was a great challenge and a great opportunity for me as an actor to, you know, really try something that stretched me. And, you know, Russell was a great director. He was really astute, and he was really all over the story. He'd had it for a long period of time and was lived and breathed it. And he surrounded himself with the cast that he wanted to work with, and really made very few compromises, and I think produced a really good quality film, you know.
Steve Bastoni is our guest on RPPFM, the voice of the peninsula, 20 minutes away from 1 o'clock. And we're scooting through the life and times of Steve Bastoni, which very much has him housed on the Mornington Peninsula, the place he loves very much and calls home. Whilst you've been fashioning your career and maintaining your career as a working actor, mm-hmm. and producer, director, writer, mm-hmm. you've also brought something really special to the Mornington Peninsula. In 2011, you established the Peninsula Short Film Festival, mm-hmm. A little bit of a dream, I guess, and just take us to those very early, I guess, meetings and moments where you're thinking, hey, why don't we do this? This would be really cool.
Well, I run an acting school on the peninsula. I would take some students, and I was trying to work out ways of which we could engage them and give them on-set experience, because it's such a big jump from classroom to film set. You know, how do you make that transition? And short film is one way of accessing that, you know. And so I was sitting in the cafe, and I looked out, and the cafe I was sitting at was at the old Broadway Cinema, which was then a secondhand furniture store with a little Flicks Cafe at the front there. And I'm sitting in Flicks Cafe, and I look out, it's now Bethy's, by the way, and I look out and I saw the statue of Frank Whittaker, and I thought, wow, this is awesome. Look at this. This has got a film history, this place. Wouldn't it be cool to have a short film festival in the back there? And I looked out, and there was the old projectionist booth up there. There was the stage. It was all there. And I could just see it. It just hit me. I thought, this is where we're going to do it. You know, we're going to do this. And in 5 weeks or something, we put out the call to entry and everything. And in 5 weeks, we put it on. And on this rainy November night in Rosebud, we had about 400 people. We took all the furniture out and put rows of seats. And we packed it out. It was people around the block and it was crazy. It was just, the response was amazing. And some great local films were shown that night. The local filmmakers won it. And we started planning the next year, you know, because it was, the councillors came up and said, this is amazing. We want to keep this here, you know, let's do it again. And they gave us some support, and some local businesses got on board with us and sponsored us to help put it on next year, the following year. And we did it again in 2012, but obviously we needed a bigger venue, so we thought we'd move it outdoors, and the Village Green seemed like a great spot. Unfortunately, in December, it's pretty cold, we moved it to December thinking we'll get a bit warmer weather, but it was freezing at night still, so we thought, this got to be a summer event. So we had to move it to the following year, which means we had to miss a year, because we couldn't, you know, we'd just done it in December, we couldn't do it again in February or January. So we missed 2013. It wasn't for anything superstitious, it was just the way it planned out. And 2014, we had our first gig at the Village Green, and it's grown year after year from there. And to this year. We had, you know, over 5,000 people there, and amazing turnout and brilliant cast, you know, judges. It was incredible having, you know, Peter Hellyer, Lockie Hume, Michaela Bannis,
Rob Connolly.
Robert Connolly, the filmmaker.
Damon
Gameau, the actor and director of that Sugar film. Mm-hmm. It's growing. We're already in planning for next year. You know, there's other things that have sprung off the back of that. Like we've got the Friday night was the Oz Indie Showcase, which we're showcasing previously unreleased independent films, and the Sunday is the Sunday Sessions, where we screen a documentary. Incidentally, that film Broke that we showcased has now got screenings all over Australia. It's had a run all over Australia, and it's coming back to the niche people. It's coming back to the peninsula May 21st, 22nd, 23rd and 24th at Rosebud and Sorrento. It's an amazing little film. It's a great film about a disgraced sports star and his sort of descent through his gambling addiction and things. But it's a really beautiful human story, gritty Aussie film. If you're out there and you want to see a good movie, come along. Check out the Peninsula Cinemas website soon for info. Or our Facebook page will have a lot of details. So Heath Davis's Facebook page.
The director.
Yeah.
The very proud director.
Yeah, he is very proud of
and
it. And rightly so.
It's a wonderful film.
Made on a shoestring, and it's doing so well.
And you're also, I know you've got to scoot soon, but your little film, The Gift, is also, you're still kind of keeping your hand in making films, juggling a whole range of things at the moment.
Yeah.
What's on the plate for you, Steve Bastoni, as you look into the rest of 2016-17?
Well, we've got a number of workshops that are happening around the film festival, film workshops for how to make a short film, ranging to screenwriting, to editing, a whole bunch of things that are going to be happening. At the Frankston Arts Centre and other venues further afield. But so we've just keep an eye out on our Facebook page for info on that stuff. And we're also, I've got the rights to two films that I'm hoping to produce this year, at least one this year, hopefully. One's based on a best-selling book called The Rugmaker of Mazar-e-Sharif, which is an incredible biography of an Afghani refugee who escaped the Taliban and managed to find his way to Australia. Incredible adventure journey. And the other one is a great comedic script by a guy called Glenn Maynard, who's a local actor/writer and a great comic who I did Barassi with.
And I play football with, actually.
You know Glenn Maynard?
In the Rock Dogs.
Oh, wow. Okay,
yeah.
Awesome.
So we've sung together, played in bands together.
Oh, wow.
And,
okay.
And we play footy together.
Oh, great.
Me and Glenn Maynard.
Small world.
Absolutely it is.
Yeah.
Steve, just reflecting on what calling the peninsula home, you're really proud of it. You've sort of also instituted the Rosebud as the major prize for the Peninsula Film Festival. There's a great sense, as a Rosebud girl, I've taken enormous sort of delight in you embracing the bud, I have to say.
That's great.
But for you, what has it meant for you to have been able to call this place home?
Look, for me, it's idyllic to be able to raise my family here. You know, there's a great sense of community on the peninsula. People care about each other generally, you know, like there's a lot of goodwill, which you don't find in the city. You know, like I know my neighbours, I know the people across the road, you know, I'm not in their living room every day, but we know each other and I know I can rely on them. If something happened, they'd be there for me. And that sense of community you don't get in other places. That sense of local pride, I just enjoy that. The way that the public's embraced the film festival has just been incredible. And, you know, if I can, you know, give something back to the place where I live in, then I'd be crazy not to. It's in my best interest to try and, you know, create a place where I want my children to grow up in. And, you know, the Rosebud, I've got a special soft spot for Rosebud because, you know, I grew up in Brunswick. And Brunswick had nothing. And, you know, people have often said, well, why don't you take it to Portsea or Sorrento? You know, you get there. And I'm like, no, Rosebud's got nothing. You know, I love Rosebud because it's salt of the earth. It's real. And, you know, I somehow identify with the underdog, you know. I just always have. And Rosebud's kind of the underdog of the niche.
We are a little. So, aspirational, though.
Yeah, we're aspirational. We're in the gutter reaching for the stars, you know, looking at them anyway. So.
Us and Oscar Wilde. It's not bad company to keep.
That's right.
Steve Vastoni, always great to keep your company. You mentioned Broke, the Heath Davis film that had its premiere at just this Peninsula Short Film Festival just gone. Max Cullen, Steve LaMarquin is Claire fantastic in the lead. Claire is fabulous. Yeah. A beautiful film, and I'm thrilled that it's coming back to the niche, as you call it. I'm going to adopt that one. Let's have a little listen to the official trailer. This film is just picking up gongs all over the world right now, so if you do get an opportunity to see it, it's great, and it does feature one Steve Vastoni, surprisingly, in another police officer role. You seem to have that. Steve, great to see you. Yeah. And thanks for coming into RPP.
Always a pleasure, Tracy. Thank you.
A little bit from Broke.
Tommy used to get me to do it before a big game. It always worked.
Could you do it harder?
Oh, you want to have a go?
No. Let's go. Now, what do you do when you get the urge to gamble?
I gamble.
Yeah, but what would you do if you could do something else?
Everyone was saying BK was in on the fix, right? Everyone's saying that. I'm like, no. No, BK's a stand-up guy. He wouldn't do a thing like that.
Hey. Get in.
I got no place to go, mate.
Hello, stranger. It's been a while.
He was our local hero. And the whole town was behind him when he was on top, and now they just turned their back on him, and it's not fair. Seems like
yesterday. In the end, all you'll do is break your heart, mate. I don't know what you're seeing in him.
You reckon you could just kind of try to train him like a normal person?
No.
Hey! Hey! Oh, come on! Hey!
All they know is footy. We eat them up and we spit them out.
Once a scumbag, always a scumbag, Kelly.
You shut your mouth or I'll knock your block off.
Oh, come on, Pops, have a crack.
What hope do we average people have then?
She's a nice girl, that Terry. Be a real shame to see something happen to her and her old man. Don't you reckon?
Look, life is about key plays, Ben, and you're in one right now. But what have we got to lose, Ben? Just remember, it's a
marathon. Take it slow. Plan for the full 80 minutes.
Hey, sis. Thanks, man.
The trailer for Broke and coming to the Peninsula Cinemas next month. Thanks again for your company on today's edition of The Wordy Rapping Hood, and my thanks to Steve Vastoni, the actor, director, producer and the director of the Peninsula Short Film Festival, for a fantastic conversation. Coming up to news time here on RPP-FM, Tracy Hutchison here with you. Thanks so much for your company today. Next week, I hope you'll join me when Tony Short, who's the principal of the Rosebud Primary School, will be my guest on The Wordy Rapping Hood.